You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
I'm now joined by Philip, the CEO and co-founder of Enlay. Enlay is a company that manages risk across the construction life cycle. Welcome, Philip.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. So I was thinking that before we start, you could give us, as much for me as for the audience, a quick summary of what your company does, a background of where you come from, and the innovation that you're presenting.
Happy to. So as you mentioned, we are at the intersections of AI and life cycle in the construction space. What does that mean? We have built an AI native tool that can help find, manage, and mitigate risks across the life cycle of a project. So not just in the execution phase, but in the pre-construction phase and even in the deal sourcing phase when you're considering even whether or not to pursue a project. That's the life cycle component. We focus mostly on commercial, contractual, and financial risks, so things that have to do with the money, the structure, the scope, the partnering, subcontractors, partners, joint ventures, all the stuff that's going to be around for the actual life of either creating or renovating the asset, and then throughout its operation and execution once it's built. The background of the company is actually kind of a funny story. So I was just mentioning to you earlier that the name of our company comes from a town that's less than an hour from where we're sitting right now. So my co-founder and I are old friends from high school. We have totally different backgrounds. I went to a school for civil engineering in the UK at Imperial College and then worked as a GC for a decade. He's originally American. He went back to the US, did neuroscience, computer science, and math at Penn. And so we had nothing to do with one another. And then 10 years later, we found ourselves physically, at least, or geographically back together in Boston when I was pursuing my MBA. And we like to joke that when we decided to work together, I didn't know nearly as much about AI as I do now. That comes from his expertise because he got a PhD in AI in Boston. And he would absolutely not know as much about construction if it weren't for me. So we're really the intersection of those two co-founded profiles. And the company has an office here in Paris and an office in Boston. So we're transatlantic. And the team was actually accelerated at the Harvard Innovation Lab. So that's why we've kept that presence over there. But obviously, a lot of our work and now our growth is happening here in Europe, part of the reason for why we're at the Leonard by Vinci offices today.
Great. Well, since we've started just kind of this origins, I think it's a good moment to lead with the question of why, what drew you to risk in the first place? Why, it's a specific sector of construction tech. What is it that called you there?
So it's very interesting because when I was a kid, I was a big fan of all things bridges. There's a funny story where I convinced my parents on a return from a holiday in Italy to take a three-hour detour to cross the Viaduc de Millau when it opened in the south of France. So I started very technical. And then when I started my career on projects, I moved all around. I found myself realizing that as an industry, we care a lot about things that are technical and technical risk, and we're therefore quite good at it. I found a lot more loss of margin, misunderstandings, conflicts with either subs or owners and clients when it came to things that were a bit more commercial or contractual or financial. And so that's one of the reasons I chose to go get an MBA. And that's one of the reasons I was exposed to risk as a pain point in the industry. It's actually through living it. I started on job sites mostly and then did a stint through proposals and bids and then went back to the project, but at a level where I was basically managing a almost 80% subcontracted scope. So it was both signing on risk when we negotiate with the owner as GCs and then passing it on to other players. And when that wasn't set up right, or when we in the nick of, you know, when you don't have necessarily the time in a project, everything's a rush and everything's urgent. Sometimes you're just trying to get stuff unlocked, and there's something that's more risky or commercial that is actually going to come and bite you afterwards. And so that's where the lifecycle component comes in. There's a couple of industry statistics that back this up. Autodesk ransom numbers last year, 30% of data that's created during the bidding or the proposal phase is lost by the time the project's completed. It's just people don't know where it went. There's also massive turnover between the pre-construction phase and the it's not the same people. Most often, the bidding or the pre-construction phase is done by people in an office or in an agency, and then that is passed on to a mostly field crew or operational crew. Mm. And there are some people, I was actually one of three out of 150 on my last job that went between the bid and the execution, but mostly it's a brand new set of people. There's a lot of loss of institutional memory there, so we kind of rediscover, as an entity, the company rediscovers scope and responsibility and risk, and that's a terrible way of managing risk. We should bring a more life cycle, more portfolio way of thinking to construction projects, and so that's why we're focusing on that tagline. Mm. The other reason we choose the word risk is because in our business, you know, in the investment world, you have investment committees where you decide whether you do a deal or not. In construction, whether you pursue a project or not, especially for the larger ones, that's called the risk committee. So you bring to that meeting as much understanding as possible on the risk profile, all types of risk, commercial, technical, contractual, environmental, safety, all of it together. Mm. You need to have all of that well understood so that you can justify to your management, yeah, we should pursue this deal. This is going to be we're going to make money off of this. For this project. So that's why we're focusing on the risk component. It did take 10 years of working in the business to realize that this was a pain point, but it is so universal across so many different types of projects, different sizes of companies, that we really thought there was opportunity for transformation and innovation there. Mm.
I think it is important to have that background that you're speaking of, to have seen that firsthand,
totally,
to really kind of be able to present an innovation that is applicable. And with that in mind, you phrased that as a risk lifecycle management technology. How would you say that compares to maybe traditional management that exists now in companies? What are you offering to upgrade and update in comparison to what's available now?
I very much like this question because there's actually a lot of software in construction. It's just kind of siloed to either use cases or specific phases of a project. So there is a lot of solutions for the execution phase of a project. And actually, that's where there's the most software that helps you manage types of risks as well as they actually occur on the project, but mostly just project manage things that happen, changes, design, all of that together. There's a lot of tools there. There are some, but fewer tools in the pre-construction phase, and those very rarely talk to the project management software. So where we come in, the one constant on a project is the kind of risk that we help analyze, commercial, contractual, financial. So the idea is to be a platform that helps you understand the scope and the risk profile of a project a lot faster in the pre-construction phase when you actually have a very short amount of time. But if we can free up some time, you can make use of that time to go negotiate or better understand and get closer alignment with the owner, which also means fewer claims down the line in the execution phase. And then we keep all of that memory and plug into the tools that you use in the execution phase so that we can compare what actually happens, because risk is realized in the field. Mm. It's all somewhat theoretical in the pre-construction phase, but it's by going and plugging into those tools that we can then compare to the original risk profile that you imagined when you first signed the deal or first decided to pursue it. So an example is we are a Silver Tier AECO partner with Autodesk and their Autodesk Construction Cloud Suite. That's an example of us plugging into a project management suite of tools, but we can bring that pre-con analysis that we did and then do some automated trend analysis and predictive AI that can help us see what's happening, compare it to what we initially anticipated, and then see if you're straying away, if there's trends that need to be managed without requiring any additional work from people. This was a big piece of feedback. Like I mentioned, there's already some software in construction, and I think universally people in the field are very busy. They're open to some new tools, but if you can plug into what they already use, that doesn't add a new piece of work to how they do stuff. So that makes it a lot easier for them to buy into the added value of what you're offering. So that's why we chose, at least for now, a strategy of plugging into very large, worldwide, widely used tools to track what's actually happening in the project, and then bring all the intelligence that we brought earlier in the life cycle so that we can finally see those trends and capture the risks before they actually happen.
Well, while we're on the topic of, you know, the sector and your work versus what other companies in the sector are doing, we did some quick math back at our offices just over the 2025 coverage of companies that are in the similar space as you. And we rounded to around 13 or 14 million euros in funding, moving across the sector.
Yeah.
Where do you see Enlay falling in that ecosystem? How does it fit?
I love this question. So there are tools that are bringing AI-powered ways of being more productive or more optimized to specific phases of a construction project. So tools that work more in the design space or the 3D space or the modeling space, they're more in the sort of design or pre-construction phase. And that's the main focus, and they sell to people who will work a lot in CAD, basically. There are also tools that are trying to optimize the way you manage things on the job site. Most often, these have to integrate in some form with existing software. I will say that tools like Autodesk Construction Cloud and Procore and the like are more widely used in North America than in Europe. In Europe, there is a much wider set of diverse tools across companies. Mm-hmm. Makes it harder to integrate into all of them, so there is a space to bring in a new one because the switching is a little less expensive. In the US, it's very hard to get companies. I mean, Autodesk and Procore are always trying to get companies to switch from one to the other. It makes it harder for startups to try and play that game. So it's more valuable to integrate in the US or in North America than it is in Europe. But so the difference where we see ourselves is A, this idea of bringing risk management or at least some concept of portfolio management to construction is actually still relatively new. This is because, and this comes back to kind of the arc of my career I was talking about earlier, you don't become a civil engineer because you like a construction contract. You do it to go build cool stuff. And so it's only after that they realize, actually, if you don't have a well-formatted structure and it's well-financed and it's insured and it's well-thought out and you've picked the right partners, without all of that upfront work, there is no project to go build. The engineer who's on site doesn't have anything to go build because that's not been unlocked. So we see ourselves bringing this life cycle approach because risk is present at every stage, a little bit different than startups that focus on something more precise to a specific phase of the project, but bigger value unlock for that one use case. Mm. We bring that across because the focus of risk management is universal, but therefore it's quite additive to other tools that are unlocking value in other ways or that are generating data that can help identify other types of risk and that can feed an overall risk analysis. This is why we see ourselves as growing along the value chain of risk, which means we actually do about 80% of our work with GCs and 20% with owners already. We work on both sides of the negotiation table. And we see ourselves as growing into construction lending or joint venture partnerships or that kind of thing, as opposed to trying and analyze every type of risk possible on a construction project, because they are tools that are developing really deep knowledge on a one specific risk or issue. Tools for safety, for example. There are entire startups that are entirely dedicated to better safety management on projects. We should be plugging into the kind of data they generate and integrating with them, as opposed to try and build yet another tool on top of that, because everyone's operating from the same sources. The digital transformation wave has already happened in construction. Mm-hmm. Now we're sitting on mountains of data. This is another Autodesk statistic. 96% of data in construction is sitting on a drive not doing anything. Because we collect vast amounts. Some of it is because you need to keep project record. Most of it is because I have it in case I need it, in case I have a claim, in case something bad happens. But we're not actively or proactively doing anything with that. So there's a ripe market to plug in, make use of that data so that you can get even better performance on managing the project and having it fit the original risk profile you imagined, with one objective in mind, which is better margins. Because we're in an industry where, you know, 3 to 5% is a good year profit margin, which is insane compared to other markets. This, especially when the volumes are as large as they are in construction. So there's a lot to unlock with data and work we're already doing. That's a big value unlock that doesn't require much behavior change. That's where we're focusing a lot of our energy.
Okay. Well, a lot of natural questions came up in my head from your answers. But I think the one that, and if I can just jump back a little bit to the beginning of your answer, you were talking about the comparison of U.S. and Europe.
Yeah.
And I think that's very interesting and applicable to just about any company beginning in Europe, any coverage of companies beginning in Europe, because there's always that question of, do you make the jump across the pond?
Yeah.
When do you make the jump? How does that affect client base? I was hoping to kind of get your perspective on where you see Enlay moving forward in that direction.
I love this question because we are perhaps a bit of an oddball in that we went both first. So we were very clearly targeting a more international brand and a more international positioning as opposed to just the US market or just the European market. And the reason behind that is because, my experience is from larger public projects where you go where the work is. So I've moved around. I did 5 different countries in my career before settling and working on Enlay. But also because in almost all of the projects, it's usually joint ventures that bid those jobs are almost always international. There is maybe a local player that has local knowledge and then another partner. And in fact, when I worked for Vinci, they were always a minority partner with a local leader. And that changed all the time. There was a lot of partnering happening. So it was a very natural fit for us to say, it's logical to be international first when you're trying to do risk management in construction, because that's already how they partner up to respond to bids and win work. So we, from the get-go, knew we had to do. Now, that was a lot of legal shuffling for an early-stage company, because we started early 2024, so we're just under 2 years old. Mm. We raised some money in the summer of 2024, that takes a lot of legal loops and hoops to have one foot on both sides of the Atlantic. But what it's allowed us to do is to understand the different ways that the construction market and network work in both geographies.
Okay.
In the US, you have to at least have a strategy and an approach to the big software incumbents and the big construction companies. If you don't have inroads there, it's very hard to peer. And this is absolutely something that solely European-based startups have to consider. They have to either come with such a backlog of proof of use case in Europe that it's undeniable, or some European partner that may be working on a project over in North America to help them come along. Mm. But the same is true in the other direction too. There are a bunch of US startups that assume that they can one-to-one transcribe the way they grew in the US over to Europe. And that's not really applicable because the European market, I think like 4 or 5 of the largest GCs in the world are European. Mm-hmm. So European GCs are actually very international. So they have a lot of diverse ways of working already. It's not centralized. And B, we did the onboarding for the Catalyst program that we're joining at Vinci. That's why we're here today. And they presented this image of Vinci from the outside appears like one big blue whale. And actually, it's 4,000 fish because it's 4,000 different companies. Mm. And that is true of almost every construction company. There's a lot more decentralization, especially in European and international firms. So that means that the approach of more centralized big European companies, of big American companies, excuse me, doesn't necessarily translate to Europe. So it's about being willing to invest in different ways of mapping the market, of presenting your personas, of presenting your value prop. So we've built it dynamic already, so we have different approaches for different geographies. That is a big change to go through a company, especially if you've already found some traction. That takes some rethink, and therefore I think that may dissuade some from making the jump too early.
Hmm. Yeah, so you're considering these geographical questions at the same time, and I imagine any startup across any sector is also considering the impact of AI.
Totally.
And you've talked about the data accumulation, which I would imagine this is a angle where this fits in quite neatly. Can you talk to me about how a company that's beginning in the digital age, you say you just found 2024, how are you adapting that? Are you integrating it gung-ho, we're all in, or is there some kind of boundaries you're setting?
So it's very interesting because we are ourselves an AI native company, which means two things. Our product is AI native. The way we work is very much so as well. But we are also in the construction space. And people that we talk to, whether it's customers, leads, or just people in the community, whereas 2 or 3 years ago, the benchmark was, why AI? That's not what it is anymore. Now it's, okay, I've used ChatGPT, I've used Copilot, how are you different? Mm. The benchmark moves really quickly. So you kind of have to use AI in some form, or at least be aware of how AI is penetrating not just the startup ecosystem, but the enterprise market that you're selling into. So the way we approach AI is very much a two-prong approach of understanding the power it brings. I said this story earlier. My co-founder has a PhD in AI. He's been a believer for a long time. But it's because we worked together to identify that all the pain points about risk management and estimates and contracts and subcontracts that I had lived on the job site, I was like, yes, everything you're telling me about the power of this tool could have really helped me then. So that was something that I got conviction on really early, even before we decided to partner up and build the company. That's a series of steps that we therefore show potential users and customers that we've been through. We say, hey, I've been in your shoes. Mm-hmm. We have 10 years of construction experience, 10 years of AI experience. We are not just here to say, do AI everything and sort of blast through it. We're here, no, these are the main things that are really, really useful use cases for you. Let's start there and then we'll grow with you. Mm-hmm. That does mean that there are, things take a little bit more time in construction. But I also think it's a lot stickier because there's still some digital transformation component to it. I'll give you an example. We have a suite of tools that we call automations, which are basically workflows and ways of helping the user who often knows how to do a certain piece of work really well, but especially in smaller companies, has never had the time to write it down. The larger companies will have lots of procedures and processes and audits and that kind of thing. A smaller GC may be very experienced and has never taken the time to write down how they work. Hmm. So these tools that we offer are basically a way of transcribing or putting into a tool the memory and the experience of how you do that piece of work. That's something that you kind of need. It's different for every, no two companies have the same processes, no two have the same risk appetite. You kind of have to walk along with them. If you do that, that's extremely sticky, and that's, you've converted a customer to a new AI use case that feels really personal, so that's a massive value unlock for them. So there's a lot of customer empathy that's required in construction, and I think that showing that we've been in their shoes and showing how we've been able to help other users is how we get to there. You know, I my investors ask me this question. The first question we most often get from a potential new user is not how much money am I going to save, it's who else uses this. Hmm. This is a business where people care that others like them have used it.
Right.
And that's why your reputation is really important, who you integrate with, partner with. That's why also by being on both sides of the Atlantic, we're showing that we care about meeting the networks and the construction culture where it is the way it is, as opposed to saying we found this magic formula, you should buy it right now.
When you're talking to these potential clients, potential customers, at what point do you feel your technology is best implemented? I mean, at what stage of a construction project is it best put in? Is it at the very beginning? Is it towards the end when you can start addressing these problems? Where do you like to go?
So in the best case scenario, the earlier the better, because actually, I'll give you an example. We have a customer in Montreal. They have a review that they have to do of every new project they look at. That used to take a team of five people 3 weeks to do. It takes the AI 12 minutes with our tool. So it's basically a way for them, the day they get access to the data room for a project, they can see whether this is a fit or not. Mm-hmm. So it's a way of making sure that you're spending your time on the best deals that are the most aligned with your risk profile so that you can focus on the projects that you're more likely to win. Better use for your bidding and estimating teams. But if you're in a project that's already several years into construction or several months in, and you have vast amount of information and you don't know how to tie back to the original bid, or you don't really know where it went wrong, we're also very useful for that kind of, for claims building and that kind of thing. But the core unlock is in that being that continuous memory tool. We do this using graph neural networks. My co-founder is the expert on all things AI, so I won't go into too much of the details. Sure. But the reason we invested into building that technology is that we can also do that on past project data. So this is the idea where the 96% of data is mostly historical. Mm. And if we build networks on past projects, we can start benchmarking new deals that you look at to stuff you've done in the past. So does this could be a similar owner or a similar joint venture or a similar type of project, a bridge, a tunnel, a renovation, a single family home, whatever it is. It's similar to these deals you've done in the past. This is what's gone wrong on them before. Let's make sure it doesn't go wrong on this one again. And by doing that analysis of using what's yours, it's your historical information, your past project data, but you would have to manually go review that yourself or hire a team to do that. Now you can just see those insights and that benchmarking without really, again, we're just unlocking that data that people are already sitting on, but we're using AI to surface it at the moment where it matters. And that's the big unlock. So depending on what your priority is, whether that moment is I want to pick better deals, then as early in the life cycle of a project as possible, whether it's I got so much to manage on this job, I just need to finish it, it can be in the execution phase as well.
Okay. Well, for the final question here, and I want to thank you for these really deep answers, actually, because...
You can tell just, I'm passionate about this.
No, no, and you open up so many different avenues for questions, which I wish we had more time. But I think the question that I want to wrap up with is, well, how do you see risk evolving up until now, 5 years from now? We've spoken about AI. Yep. Is it becoming easier to manage risk through the tools that are available, or is it becoming perhaps more complex because now you're having to consider factors that weren't available 10, 15 years ago?
I love this question because there's you'll see I like numbers. Another statistic is that the number of pages in a construction contract has been multiplied by 4 in the last decade. So actually what, and this is an industry and a worldwide trend, it's been going on for many, many years, more and more risk is being passed from owners onto builders or joint ventures of builders and designers when it's a design build contract, that kind of thing, because more and more of the knowledge is on the execution side and not on the owner side. 100 years ago, it was state agencies were where you had the most knowledge on how to build things and you did projects at the scale of nations. Now most of that knowledge is entirely in the private sector. So a lot of risk is transferred to a bidder that has to decide whether or not to take it on and to negotiate. So the amount of risk has only been going up. We're bringing our tools as a way of trying to counterbalance or at least make it more digestible to understand this risk that's being dumped on bidders so that they can understand what they're signing and then put competitive bids in. That's a trend that I think is going to continue. So we're really just an answer to that trend. I think AI does bring in a new source of risk, but honestly, with good data governance, which is already a very hot topic in construction, most of the customers we talk to have flat out banned ChatGPT on their job sites because they're worried about data privacy. They worry about who has X. And I'm talking contracts and stuff that can help you win or lose a project. So we only use open source models. We host them in secure servers. We have a series of servers in the EU and a series of servers in North America. This is the kind of stuff where, again, we also show the customer that we care deeply about how they view their own data. And we've structured the way the company provides its services in a way that's compatible with those concerns. Mm-hmm. That's another way of showing that, hey, we are actually, even though most of my team is actually tech people because we are building an AI solution, we come with deep care and empathy for the construction space. And so we'll go that extra structural distance to align with what you're expecting or hoping to see, as opposed to asking them to take a leap in either faith or data sharing that they may not be willing to do. That's been mostly the holdback in this space. Is if 96% of the data is there and they really wanted to use it, they would have given access to that already. There's something about, no, it's got to be done in the way that feels like it's, I'm not giving away my secret sauce. And I think that that is a new risk that AI getting access to everything could present with the right data management and taking your time to really see the use cases that are most useful. I think the industry is actually pretty open to using them in that framework.
I think you've explained that beautifully. You know, coming from somebody who doesn't have a background in construction and wouldn't necessarily understand what risk management entails, I think
it's not the sexiest tagline.
But
it's a huge topic in the
industry. But you've grounded it, I think, in a real world application that would be valuable for anybody who's watching this episode. So
I'm
thank
glad
you very
the
much, Philip.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure having you.
Likewise.